Pathway family, it's Andrew. I just wanted to say hi. It's, you know, I can't wait to see you guys when we get back together. And I just wanted to remind everyone that even through all this, when we can't be with each other, you are loved, you are cared for, you are thought about, and you are prayed for. Stay strong. We can do this. Just a little while longer. Thanks. Bye.
Pathway friends. Little disclaimer. I have hair. It's gotten long. And I washed it and I fixed it. I don't do that for everybody. So I must really love you. Because it's usually in a hat or in a headband. It has been for the last 3 months. So you're really special because I actually fixed my hair. Two, yes, there's a deer on the back wall, which Gary's brother did that. He just let us use it because it fit in our room. We're not hunters, but I do have a camo shirt, and it's my I Raise a Hallelujah shirt, one of my favorite shirts. And I don't know why I thought when you see deer, you got to wear camo, but why not? But I have this story that's related to a deer and a baby deer that I want to share with you because I have a little bit of analogy. So it's a little long, and I've done this twice, and it was like 5 minutes. So I'm trying to cut it down, Lewis, I promise. But anyway, the other night, Gary came in and said there's a fawn trapped in the field behind the barn, and it's just going nuts around the edges, and it's running into the fence, and apparently its mom is nowhere, and we need to try to corral it and get it up maybe to the gate or see if I can catch it and put it over the fence. Yes, that's what we're going to try to do. If you ever tried to chase a baby deer or anything, it's like, but anyway, so I run and get my phone because I think it's going to be, you know, got to film it. But anyway, we get down there and we're doing everything to try to get her to calm down and to try to get her into a spot where either Gary can lift her up or whatever. Well, it's not working because she is going bananas, which is only fair. So about that time, this beautiful doe comes out from the other field and stops and looks at us and then looks at her baby, and they're making some kind of noises back and forth. And she comes up to the fence that separates both of them, and she jumps flat-footed, probably 4.5-5 foot fence, over to her baby. And I'm like, oh, yay, it's all good. You know, we're all back together and they're nuzzling and it's just so sweet, and I got tears in my eyes, and It's like, oh, this is the best. And then the mom turns around and she jumps back over the fence to where she came from. And here's a little bit over here, just like, excuse me, I can't do that. How are we gonna do this? So it starts running around again and starts like just running into the fence and running up and down the fence and just pawing at it and everything. And it's, she's just standing there for a little while. Well, then I think, if I'm not mistaken, Gary will correct me, but she comes back over and jumps back over, does something, says, I don't know what she's saying. I don't know what deer talk. And she jumps back over again. It's like, okay, we can do this together. Watch mommy. And she jumps, you know, well, that's not happening. So the baby's just still doing this. So I'm just like, oh my gosh, she can't leave her here. What are we going to do? So she just stands there and she's just waiting. And she's making this little muffled noise. And the baby's still going nuts, you know, trying to get over. And then, y'all, all of a sudden, it just makes one leap. And you have to understand this fence, the holes in the fence, it's a wire fence, are like 6x6. I think, close to that. Just small holes. She goes at that fence. I about dropped the phone by then because she jumps at that fence. She wiggles her body, and she's not like a newborn. She's fairly big, long legs, wiggles and maneuvers herself through that hole to get to the other side, to get to her mom. And I thought she's got to be hurt or whatever, but it was, she was getting through that fence to her mom, no matter what it took. And they nuzzled for a while again, and then just walked off, and they kind of turned back and looked at us, and it was just like, I don't know. It was the sweetest thing, but it was like crazy, because that should be impossible for that baby to do. You hear about people doing things crazy that, you know, when they get adrenaline starts flowing. But I thought about the analogy of, that's us sometimes running around in circles and beating our heads against a wall or butting things and trying to figure out what to do. How can I fix this? I got to fix this. We're not going to make it through. This is, you know, what's going to happen? We're, you know, and here we go on our downward spiral. And God's just waiting. And he's like, come on. I'm here. Just come to me. And if we can let ourselves do that and we have that determination and that mindset of nothing is going to keep us from God and nothing can keep us from God, we can do the impossible. We can do things that we said and we think are humanly impossible to do, like get through a pandemic or watch the news at night or figure out, you know, if we've got health issues or our family has health issues or job loss or money loss. But it's, we've taken our eyes off Jesus, and we got lost somehow along the way, just like that baby. I'm not sure how that happened. But if we keep our eyes on God, he's going to be waiting. And he's just saying, come on, come back to me, and we'll figure this out together. So take that for what it's worth. I know it's a long story, sorry. But that's my story. I'm sticking to it. But anyway, you know, there's not one thing that we face on this earth that's, that we can't, you know, with God's help, we can't get through. So just don't forget that. Everybody forgets that every now and then. I'm no different than anybody else. I have good days and bad days. Keep our eyes on God and on Jesus. Miss you all. Love you. Some of us have been meeting at the farm on Monday night at Loretta's farm. It's really cool. Gets us back together in a little bit. I know that there's some word that we're going to, you know, sometime July, August, be able to meet again, hopefully. I don't know how that's going to be. It's going to be crazy, but it's going to be awesome. That's all I know. So, yeah. So there it is. So raise a hallelujah every now and then. And remember, nothing's impossible with God. So I will see you. I guess this is airing Sunday night. Love you. Thank you.
Ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Hey, Pathway family. Welcome back. It's another Sunday. Glad to be with you. Glad to be coming through and to have some discussions around what's going on, what we can do to be a part of it. And so we're going to kick off early. Going to go ahead and kick off a conversation, kind of jumping off where we were last week, and just kind of keep moving forward, trying to keep having that conversation. So, Wendell, why don't you go ahead and kick it off?
All right. Thanks, Lou. I'm Wendell. I love Jesus. He loves me. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to work and food, and I've had control issues, which are an edgy issue right now. And we'll talk about that in a minute. And I've had issues in the past with porn and alcohol and panic attacks and depression and even some anger to the point of rage. So that's me.
Hi, Wendell.
Hey. Before we get started, and I keep this again because we've got the Serenity Prayer for it to close. Before we get started, I might just want to let everybody know there in Pathway Land that moves are being made to open up for small groups. We've got some dates set that we'll talk about in the near future. So there is light at the end of the tunnel, and there is motion taking place. So don't despair. We will be back together, not in the vague future, but in the specific future. Some small groups, and then some tentative ideas for when we can get together as a whole. So that's coming. We'll let you know when we have the info. Anyway, last week we talked about racism. And had some interesting discussions in our Zoom rooms. And everywhere you go today, whether you're with people all of the same color or of mixed races or whoever you're talking to, we're talking about racism these days. And some say there is no racism. That's one extreme, and others are enraged by it to the point of looting and pillaging. So, I mean, you've got both extremes.
Wide spectrum.
Yeah. So we want to talk about a component of all this that I think has probably been poked with a stick due to the pandemic, and that is the whole thing of anger. And Lewis and I both, when we introduced ourselves, admit openly that we've had issues with anger in the past and still, I don't want to put words in your
mouth. No. We still struggle with anger.
Yeah.
Still struggle with being triggered by things that just make us, that really kind of pisses us off.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And here lately, I've talked to a lot of people, and it seems like about 3 weeks ago, 3 to 4 weeks ago, I don't know what it was. I don't think it was the Floyd thing. I don't know what it was. But all of a sudden, I start feeling this anger. And a lot of people I've talked to have said, yeah, that's kind of when it started. Go figure. If you out there in TV land, in the virtual land, if you've got an answer for that, email it in, please. Why it started 3 weeks ago, I don't know. I think we'd had it up to here with this pandemic and the way it's frustrated us and everything. So, like we've been saying, is I write a blog on Monday, and I wrote the blog on anger this past Monday, and the two things that kind of came out that we want to dig into deeper today is the statement that makes me angry with our finger pointed. That person makes me angry. That statement makes me angry. That event makes me angry. And we're pointing outside of ourselves. That makes me angry. And we could do that all day long. We could just, and especially today, I've got a pocket full of that's.
Me too.
It's not just the racial thing.
No.
It's all kind of stuff that. And I think if we're going to be honest in our recovery, that it starts there. You have to admit the object of your anger, but it's not the source of your anger. It may be the target you're shooting at, but it's not the reason you're shooting. If that makes sense. And I think that what we have to do is in recovery is have this talk about why does that make me angry? What is it about me, not the event, what is it about me that responds with anger at that event, that person, that statement. So that's what we're going to dig in. And we cheated. We ate lunch together. So we talked about this earlier at a beautiful setting over at Kyriakos in a pavilion. But it goes to me, and you jump in here. It goes to control. I want to control my future. I want to control my comfort level. I want to control my mental empire that I've built of my values, my ideals, you know, this construct. It could be political, it could be theological, it can be cultural, it can have something to do with etiquette and protocol. Certain things are appropriate, they're not appropriate. So I've built this little thing in my mind of what I think life should look like. And when somebody threatens that or challenges that, it frightens me, and that fear translates into anger. I'm going to say that's... Jump in on that.
I agree with you. I think the thing for me is that I want to control my own safety. And having grown up in a racially non-diverse place where the brown skin was the closest thing there was to diversity.
And the black skin.
And so for me, it has always been about control, but it's been about it builds up this thing about controlling my safety and controlling who I am and who I don't want to be. So I agree, it's absolutely about control. The motives may change, but as to why you feel like you need to control that situation through anger, but the base bedrock of the whole thing is the fact that it's control. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, there are just certain things to, as humans, if you go into a room full of chairs and they're all hardback wood chairs and there's one lazy boy, there's nobody else in the room, you're going to pick the lazy boy. And there's nothing wrong with that. We were built for that.
Yeah.
If you have a choice, I'm going to smell the south end of a cow, a septic tank, or a rose, we're going to pick a rose. You know?
Yes.
You like my...
I like that. The south end of a northbound cow.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Do I want to eat a pizza or do I want to eat artichoke? Well, some people really like artichokes. So we're built to gravitate toward comfort. And there's nothing that's natural.
Mm-hmm.
But when we grow to think that we're entitled to that comfort and that safety and that mindset, you threaten that, and it frightens me, and then I have two choices. I either run from you or I fight you.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, we want to come out of our isolated caves and fight each other. And cross swords with people who disagree with us.
Yeah. And it has come down to, it's the stop response.
Yes.
It's the stop response.
It's more of a reaction. The anger is just a reaction.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not really a response.
It's the go-to. In every situation, people get angry when people don't wear masks. People get angry when people do wear masks. People get angry when they need to stay 6 feet apart. People get angry when they don't need to stay 6 feet apart. I mean, we've taken every situation, and no matter what side of the situation we're on,
yes,
we're angry at the other side.
Yes, yes.
Because it challenges us. And when you challenge me, you challenge my control over me.
Yeah.
And that makes me angry.
Yeah. And we may be jumping way ahead of that we may need to talk more about this control thing, but to me, the opposite, that may not be the best word, opposite, but the medicine, the therapy for control is cooperation, to where we say, let's us find some common ground and do this together instead of slinging mud or swinging swords at each other. And you hear everybody talking about their rights these days. It's my right to do this. It's my right to do that. Is anybody talking about our well-being? You know, it's just my rights instead of our well-being.
Yeah, I heard something today about the me versus we.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
There's when we get caught up in either side, me versus we.
Yeah.
We lose sight of the other.
Yeah.
And if we don't, it's like when you say, I see you.
Yes, I hear you.
I see you. Seeing someone, hearing someone is another way of saying I love you.
Yes.
And when we don't see someone else because we are too caught up in the we or the me, even if we do truly love that person, we're not telling them that because we're letting that anger come in between us.
I mean, the phrase has been around for centuries, blinded by rage or blinded by anger.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can't see because I'm too angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. We're going to talk about this some next. We're going to pursue this in another way next week. But I've heard some people say, you know, the circles I live in, I don't have any black friends. Or I don't work with any black people. Or I don't work with any Hispanics. Or I don't work with any Asians. Or I don't work with any gays or lesbians. Or I don't work with anybody of a Muslim faith. You all are saying we need to have these conversations. Well, I don't know anybody of these conversations, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a legitimate...
It is.
You know, so what do I do? You know,
that's a great question. How am I supposed to have a conversation with somebody that I am never around?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether it has nothing to do with whether I choose to be around them or not. The situation is, I'm never around them.
Right.
Can't have a conversation with somebody that I'm never around.
Right, right.
So how do we fix that? How do we get better at that?
Yeah.
And I think that's... Again, we talked about this a little bit last week. It starts with relationships.
Yeah.
And being intentional about it.
And I think the other part, too, is what we're going to talk about next week. We'll just tell you straight up what we're going to talk about next week. We're going to talk about religious and political addiction and cultural addiction. The three things. Religious addiction, cultural addiction, and political addiction. And if you don't think you're addicted to your culture, your own specific culture, or your own specific set of beliefs, or way of carrying out your religion, or your own political persuasion, try switching the news stations you watch to a completely different one. Try not doing all the religious activities that you have set out to be, this is my religious life, I got to do these things. Try not running every conversation you have through your cultural grid of protocol and etiquette. That wasn't a very nice thing to say. Boy, I would never say it that way. Well, you know, try not run it through. Try to be open-minded about that. And you'll see real quick, I'm the way I am to a large extent because I'm addicted to it. I say it's me, but what it really is my addiction. And we'll dig into that, some next week. But this is me personally. I'm trying to watch more documentaries or movies or shows, for lack of a better term, that show what racism looks like from a black perspective, not from my conceptual white perspective, but an actual black perception. You know, oh, they're so skewed. Oh, they're so extreme. Oh, they're so, okay, I'll take that chance. You know what? I'll take that chance. If it's their story, told in extreme measures.
I think when we say that, we do ourselves a great disservice.
I know. Yeah.
Because we say that, well, that I'm not going to listen to them because they're so skewed in a way that I don't believe. We do ourselves a great disservice. We're telling ourselves we're not smart enough to suss through that.
Right.
We're not intelligent enough to look past their biases.
Right.
To see what the real story is, or what the story that they're trying to tell is.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the other thing is a lot of things that we find strange, we put in the that's not right category. Mm. It's strange to me, therefore it's not right.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not going to name any stores or anything. So Robbie and I have started to eat out some. My wife, Robbie, and I have been starting to eat out some. So we went to this one. She loves onion rings. So this one place we go, she loves her. She always gets them. I prefer the fries. She prefers the onion rings. But this other place we go, she got onion rings. And as soon as she took a bite, it's like, these are not onion rings. And I said, give me a bite. And I said, yeah, they're onion rings, but the batter is completely different than the other place.
Right.
So you bite into it expecting to taste the other way, but it tastes sweet. Therefore, it's not an onion ring. So people who speak...
And you don't like it.
Right.
You automatically don't like it. It doesn't even get to the palate
Right. Before
you say, I don't like that.
Right.
Because it's not...
Yeah. What you expect.
This. I tend to do that with my wife's cooking a lot. I mean, when she made... I'm to the point now where I can't eat steak.
Yeah.
That she doesn't cook.
Yeah.
Because it's what I like.
Right.
And it's what I'm used to.
What you're used to.
And it's what I have come to expect.
Put a piece of beef in your mouth.
It's supposed to taste like this. And you're exactly right.
Yeah.
We don't give it a chance to, because I'm sure there's some fine steaks being cooked out there somewhere.
Yeah.
But we don't give it that chance. We give it a sniff test and not a taste test. Right? So we sniff
good
it.
Good metaphor.
Like, that's not what...
Yeah.
I mean, that's... I don't need to taste that.
Right.
I know that's not right.
Right. So we do that. We do that with various cultures, with various viewpoints, with various political persuasions.
Religious perspective.
Yeah.
Even inside Christianity, we do that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, or it, and it, we're doing ourselves a great disservice.
Right.
I think.
Right. So
relying to our
so if we don't have any Hispanic friends or Asian friends or black friends or whatever, we can at least start exposing ourselves through the media, through books, through articles, to a completely opposite perspective.
Yeah.
And take the chance and trust your IQ and trust your ability to see through things. Don't go into it with preconceived ideas, but go into it with an open mindset. I want to hear what they're saying because there's a reason they're saying it. I may not agree with everything they're saying, but there's a reason, there's a backstory to why they're saying this. And so sniffing it will not give you that backstory.
Nope.
Biting into it will give you the backstory.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden that turns from an enemy or, you know, some kind of off-putting person to somebody you're curious about, and you think, I kind of would like to get to know them. I would like to know more.
Mm-hmm.
All of this is melting down the why of my anger. I don't have to control you. I want to know you. As long as I want to control you, I'm going to be angry when you don't do what I want you to do. But when I want to know you, it's like I'm giving up control. I want to hear your narrative, and I'm going to shut up and listen.
Shut up and listen.
You got the floor,
wow.
Dude.
Yeah.
You got the floor.
Yeah. When we give up our right to control, the anger melts away. You're absolutely right.
There's no solid ground to stand on.
Right. Yeah.
It just loses all its footing.
Yep.
Because, and the thing is when you look at Jesus, who had the more right to control the narrative than anybody, because he always knew the beginning from the end, he always knew the truth, he would sit and listen to people who were completely out of their minds compared to him.
Oh, yeah.
Their viewpoint was like, really? And yet he listened to them, and he dialogued with them, and he helped. He never dismissed them. He never just sniffed them and walked away. He dug into their story. And so to be a follower of Christ does not mean, I believe, a certain set of standards or political persuasions or religion. To be a follower of Christ means I am a listener of people. Mm. And I'm a listener of stories.
Yeah.
Because you're a human being, and I want to know.
I want to know your story.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and that's what makes what happens in Pathway so powerful, is the story.
Yeah.
And I can listen to a story. I've never been to some of the places that some of our folks have been.
No.
Never been there, you know? And, but hearing their story opens up their life to our life.
Yeah.
And that's the power of story.
Yeah, yeah. And absolutely.
Yeah.
There's nothing, and that's what, that's the nuts and bolts of humanity. That's what establishes the common ground to all humans, is we all got a story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll pick up with this next week.
Yep.
And we're gonna dive all fours, cannonball, right into religious, cultural, and political addiction, and we'll see if we sink or swim.
You're exactly right.
I can dog paddle.
We'll find out.
All right, Pathway family. We're gonna close with the Serenity Prayer, and I'm gonna read it because I'm a cheater. And don't know it all by heart in terms of in front of a camera. So let's join hearts. If we can't join hands, let's join hearts and say it together. Here we go. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as a pathway to peace. Taking as Jesus did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it. Trusting that you will make all things right if I surrender to your will, so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with you forever in the next. Amen.
Keep coming back. God loves you.
Yeah.
We love you too.
Love you, brother.
Love you too, buddy. We'll see you guys next week.
So long.